Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to MacBreak Weekly, episode number 3. I'm Scott Bourne from theilivezone.com, and I'm filling in this week for Leo Laporte and Alex Lindsay. Big shoes to fill, but hey, I'll do my best. Fortunately, I have a great crew alongside to help me out. Joining me this week is the editorial director and vice president at Macworld Magazine. Give it up for Mr. Jason Snell.
Hi, Scott.
Where was the big audience applause? I don't know what happened.
Yeah, woof, 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 woof.
Anyway, also helping out this week is the one and only Chris Breen, also from Macworld Magazine, and of course my co-host on the iLive Zone. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. And rounding out this week's panel is Merlin Mann. Merlin is, of course, the genius behind the popular blog 43 Folders. Hi, Merlin.
How's it going, Scott?
Good. Glad to have you on the show. We are going to have a shorter show than usual, but we promise to make it count. And guys, let's get right into it. Jason, you've had some time to really examine the new Mac Pro. On episode number 1 of Mac Break Weekly, our friends Leo and David Pogue literally, and I do mean literally, yawned at the thing. Yeah. So what's your reaction?
I don't think it's entirely fair to yawn at it. It's a good product. It is the fastest Mac in existence. I mean, the 2.66 gigahertz and 3 gigahertz models are both the fastest Macs we've ever tested. They're the top two. But there are a lot of caveats. I mean, if you're using Adobe Creative Suite, it's running in Rosetta, you know, and at that point, a Mac Pro becomes about as fast as a dual 1.4 gigahertz G4. So, you know, if you're living and dying by Photoshop and you don't have a G5 and not a G4, it's not a good idea. And then the other thing is, because it's quad core, so it's got those four processor cores in it that are supposed to be chugging along at full efficiency and giving you all this incredible power, there's a lot of software out there that just hasn't been optimized to use multiple processor cores, even two, let alone four. And so, you know, the end result is that for some people, the Mac Pro is just going to be this incredibly awesome system. But for others, you know, it's not the fault of the Mac Pro as much as it is that the software, I think, is just not there yet. And hopefully over the next year, all these developers who've been busy getting their stuff to run on Intel can turn to optimizing for multiple processor cores. Because with the exception of that one low-end Mac Mini, every Mac now is a multi-core machine. But on the Mac Pro especially, you really need to do it. I mean, I used Apple's Compressor, which is a video encoding utility that is, you know, really high end. It's part of Final Cut Pro, and it couldn't use even half the processor power of that Mac Pro, and that's not good. It should be maxing out all four cores.
So you mean that Apple actually built a computer that's ahead of its time?
I think so. I think the developers have been so. I mean, to get speed out of software, it used to just be you'd sit and wait, and the processor's clock speeds would get faster, and that meant your apps got faster. And with multiple cores, you gotta write the software differently. You've got to make changes to your software to split jobs into pieces and throw them to the different processor cores and then reassemble them at the end. And, you know, to be fair, developers have been busy just getting their apps running on Intel, and that's been the right thing to do. But the end result is that there's a lot of untapped performance in all of these Intel Macs, and no more than the Mac Pro. I mean, there's a huge amount of power sitting there. But in most of my tests and most of the Macworld Lab tests, it was doing just that. It was sitting there.
What do you think about the new capacity for hard disk drives?
Oh, I mean, that's one of the great things about the Mac Pro is that it addresses a lot of the problems with the G5. I mean, the G5 was a product designed on the inside entirely because of heat, because the G5s threw off so much heat. So they had 9 fans, and they had the liquid cooling system. And with that stuff gone, because the Xeons really don't use a lot of power and don't get really hot, you know, the Mac Pro has 4 fans. It doesn't have any of the kind of cooling architecture that the G5 had. And as a result, you know, there's room for 4 drives. You can get basically, you could stick 4 750 gig drives in there and have 3 terabytes inside. You could do some striping, take a couple of drives and stripe them together, and you can get like super fast storage performance. So there's a lot of really good things on the inside. That's one of the areas actually where you can get a huge performance boost, is just by sticking in a bunch of drives and making a RAID array.
Now, we do want to mention that the 750 gig drives you're talking about aren't from Apple.
No, actually, Apple doesn't sell anything bigger than a 500 right now. So Apple says that the Mac Pro is a max 2 terabyte internal storage. But in reality, you can go out and buy 750 drives, SATA drives, and stick them in there, and they work just fine.
Chris, we've had some time since WWDC. Have you had any more chance to look at this machine?
No, just other than read the reports on Macworld and look at the work that Jason and Jim Galbraith have done, as well as sort of salivate over it. Because, as Jason says, this is the future machine, I hope, for me someday. I'm looking down the line that this is the computer I'm going to want for the next couple of years, or next 3 years, perhaps. There's a lot of untapped power in there. There are a lot of things I can imagine doing with this machine. But as Jason says, it's not the applications need to catch up still. And we've seen this kind of transition before. For example, when the Velocity engine first came in, there was that power waiting, but that developers had to create applications that would work with it.
Well, speaking of power, Apple, Dell, and the former IBM laptop maker, I can't say that new name.
Lenovo.
Lenovo. That just seems wrong to me.
It does.
Anyway, they've agreed to develop some new battery standards. Chris, does this mean we can probably tell the fire department it's no longer necessary to follow us around when we've got our laptops?
Well, it means that we don't have to pick on Apple all the time now for exploding batteries. Now it's everybody's problem. Yeah, this is, surprisingly enough, there hasn't been a standard for creating lithium-ion batteries. I mean, the standard is that they work and they fit in the machines, but there hasn't been sort of a big committee getting together to handle this, and now there is. This is Apple and Lenovo, HP and Dell are getting together as part of an OEM critical components committee to come up with standards for lithium-ion batteries that will go into portable devices and handheld electronics. Partly this comes from, well, Dell would say that this isn't the case, but recently there was a recall of 4.1 million batteries manufactured by Sony that maybe some of them would overheat and possibly catch fire. And it's time for sort of the companies to let down their guards about intellectual property and just say, look, we need one standard for these batteries. We have to be able to ensure that the batteries coming to all of us are going to be safe. They're going to work as they're supposed to. And it's also good for the people developing these batteries. Now they know the spec to write to, or they will once the spec is determined. And they then don't have to sort of make tweaks when Apple comes and says, no, we want this from your battery. And HP says, well, we want something different. Instead, they just say, look, this is your standard. Here's the spec. This is the spec we're writing to. And we promise they won't explode.
I found it interesting that it appears that there's a chance that the batteries in the MacBooks are somehow connected to the ones that were recalled by Dell.
Well, Apple has said that these batteries do not meet their strict requirements, and we're not sure what that really means. It's possible that they've looked and discovered that these batteries are coming from the same place as the Dell batteries, and that they want to step in early and say, we need to make sure that these batteries are going to work okay. There's a voluntary recall on these things, but I guess I read somewhere on a website that even though that's pretty big news that these batteries need to be recalled, and specifically I'm talking about the Dell batteries, very few people have stepped up and said, oh, I have one of those. Maybe I'd like a new one, please and thank you. And it may be that people aren't paying attention or don't follow this kind of news, but I think we would, and we would then step in and say, whoa, I've got one of these. Please send me a new one.
Probably a very good point in the show to say, if you have a battery that meets any of the recall standards from any manufacturer, please send it back. And Merlin, I want you to jump in real quick because you're kind of a process guy. You're always looking for ways to refine things. It strikes me that they could have come up with a little better process than doing this after they'd shipped millions of batteries.
Yeah, that seems like the toughest time to try and take care of a problem like that. I'm one of the MacBook Pro users who, you know, got the whole thing and they exchanged my battery, and I haven't seen any difference. I haven't been in flames. I have the same large amount of heat in my legs by the end of the day. So I think that it hasn't affected the heat problem. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the kind of thing that they would have caught really early on. Did they say this is the largest consumer electronics recall of all time?
And Apple refuses to call it a recall. I got the same thing. I got the notice that said, your battery on your MacBook Pro doesn't meet our high standards. Send it back. But by the way, this is not a recall.
Actually, I think If I can jump in here, what I read was that Apple was saying it was performance related, that in some, whether it's life or whether it's the length of charge in a battery, that it didn't meet their standards, and so they were getting them replaced. It isn't quite a recall, because we have a few of those here, and what they said is, you can hold on to it. You don't need to send it back right away. We will send you a new battery. So, you know, obviously Apple isn't concerned about safety with their recall. It's something else, and they don't want us to know what, but it's something else.
Well, see, that's just it. I always wonder because there's so much nefarity. Is that a word?
It should be a word.
Yeah.
I get the sense that I'm getting just a tiny bit more life out of mine, because the first thing I noticed was I wasn't holding more than about, an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 50 minutes in standard usage. And I feel like I'm getting a little more out of it. I don't know if that's me noticing it. But
I get 3 hours and 2 minutes on average.
Well, I hate you. You're getting that out of a MacBook Pro?
I am.
Is it hooked up to a horse or something? How are you getting that?
On the battery, I'm taking the power thingy off, and that's the technical term for the thing that attaches to the computer, and it works for about 3 hours and 2 minutes on the 12 tests I've done.
What is that? The 15-inch?
Yes, it was one of the early ones. In fact,
I think I might have a battery that belongs on the short bus.
There you go. Well, let's move along, because we do have a short show this week, and I want to make sure we cover as much of the news as we can. And I'm going to take this next one because it's something near and dear to my heart. I do want you guys to jump in when I'm done. Apple is going to be at Photokina for the first time. For those of you that don't know, Photokina is the world's largest photography trade show. It happens every 2 years in Germany. It dwarfs anything that we have in this country. And Apple has a very large booth scheduled there and a large press conference coming in September. And I think what we're going to probably see is the next iteration of Aperture, the sometimes unfairly maligned photography software that I happen to enjoy and use and teach. And I wonder, though, is there anything else going to come? And that's where I want you guys to chime in. I'm almost certain we're going to see 1.5 or 2.0. There'd be no reason for Apple to spend this kind of money to go to Photokina if they weren't going to do something. But does anybody else have any sense that anything big is coming besides that? Jason, you want to step in?
You know, I think that makes perfect sense. I think you're right. I when you look at Apple's whole message about Aperture, it's about professional photographers, and they use professional photographers as the testimonials for the product. And, you know, so that makes perfect sense. Apple seems to be pretty good about picking their spots. They don't feel like they need to roll out 10 different products every time they have a press conference or a keynote. They sort of pick the right product for the right place. And, you know, that seems to be the right place for that product. And, you know, the rollout of Aperture was kind of unfortunate, because I think everybody agrees it wasn't ready. And maybe this is a second chance for Apple to get it right.
Well, I will say that they have to make a greater effort, because they're not the only game here. I mean, obviously, Adobe is doing big things in this space, and Apple is really playing catch up and needs to kind of do the big announcement. And so I think you're right. It may even go up to Aperture 2 rather than just skip the whole 1.5 thing altogether.
And Apple's been very quiet. I mean, they're always quiet, but they've been very quiet. In fact, we have not been able to reach Joe Shore, who the last time we checked was the Aperture project lead. Now, we don't know if that's still the case, because they're in bunker mode, but I do think something big is going to happen with Aperture, and I'm someone who's used it from day one. Derek Story and I taught the first Aperture class at Macworld last year. We actually didn't think it was that bad a product. We thought that the problem was the messaging didn't match the capability. Apple touted it as being a little bit more powerful than it was, and they weren't crystal clear about what kind of machine you needed to run it. Then when they did their small upgrade to 1.1, the few bugs that were there were fixed. I use the program literally every day, and I don't have any problem with it in its present iteration. It runs very quickly on my MacBook Pro, but I am anxious to see if they can respond to some of the things that have happened as a result of Lightroom, which is Adobe's answer to Aperture, even though they say it's not.
Okay. Well, at the same time, Apple said that Aperture was not a Photoshop competitor, and clearly that's how people are looking at it.
Yeah, it really isn't a Photoshop competitor. It's similar to what Photoshop does, but it's actually better described as a place to do photo editing, not manipulation. In other words, decide what photo you want to use. That's what Aperture is good at. And then to help you rate it and keyword it and store it and do basic printing and manipulation of it, but nothing fancy. No superpowered pixel pushing like you can do in Photoshop. Anyway, if anybody hears anything about what's going on at Photokina, let me know, because I'm not going to go this year. It's just too far. All right, Merlin, you're the perfect guy to ask this question. Should Apple be more social networking centric? We live in the world of Dig and all this other stuff. Apple's got .Mac. Apple's got all these applications in the iLife suite. Have they dropped the ball on not getting ahead of the curve here?
That's a good question. Like a lot of people, I've been following all these little kind of breadcrumb trails that people have been picking up. I think there's been some interesting stuff coming out in Leopard. You're going to see this wiki server coming out. You know, finally, there's going to be a way to share iCal calendars and have more than one person edit them. I don't know if they dropped the ball. I mean, Mac's always had such a dedication to making it easy for people to hook up together. And it seems like OS X, that's really exploded. And you look at things like Subethe Edit, right? The kinds of things like these very kind of lightweight applications that let people collaborate. And I think the biggest opportunity here is in kind of the way agile teams work together, kind of small teams. You're not going to see people building bridges in 15 different countries working together with this stuff. But for five people in a room who need to collaborate or maybe across a network, I think there's some really exciting opportunities. And you know, that's the kind of people I see using this stuff right now, kind of developers, designers, creative types. And I feel like there's a lot of market opportunity there.
In terms of social media, there's been some rumor recently that YouTube really wants to go after the video market that iTunes is also going after. Do you think Apple should buy YouTube?
If they want to pay that bandwidth bill, I think they should go with it. But I don't know. It's funny. Apple seems to be at such a funny point right now where it's once again kind of deciding what kind of company it is. So much of the stuff we saw in Leopard, at least at this point, seems to be about integration with other products and you know, doing things like these odd stationary templates in Mail. And you know, it's funny though, for the small business user, we're looking for like some features that are really going to help these small teams collaborate. I don't know. I mean, does Apple want to be in the MySpace business? I don't know. I don't see them going that way.
Yeah, my only concern is that if they get competition in that space that starts to eat into their market share, they may wish they had. We'll find out more later. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to something that shows that Apple has done something right lately, and that is, Jason, I've read reports that the supply of the MacBook computer is dwindling and that the demand far exceeds it. I guess all these rumors that the MacBook had problems haven't done a thing to slow sales.
You know, I can't say I'm surprised. The day that that product was announced, and it was interesting because it was not a big Steve Jobs. This is, goes back to my point about how Apple can sort of release a product whenever they want now. They made no big deal about it. They just put out the press release and said, hey, MacBook's available today. And that day, you know, we went down to the Apple store in San Francisco and we got a couple of them, brought them back to the office for testing. And I have never in my time at Macworld, not even when the iMac came out really, had so many people mob me to look at a new system as the systems we brought back from the Apple store, because everybody, I mean, everybody that I ran into was either an iBook user or a 12-inch PowerBook user or, you know, something like that, and had been holding out, waiting for the new Intel-based consumer laptop. And so I can't say I'm surprised. Everybody I talk to, people, you know, I know in my personal life, people here at our office who are can be kind of jaded because we see this stuff all the time, every day. And everybody was just so excited about that MacBook. And, you know, so it's not just me. I'm somebody who used to use the 12-inch PowerBook. So, of course, I was really excited about it. And I'm speaking to you now from a 12-inch or from a 13-inch black MacBook. But I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, some people who are really into the internet, you know, and go out there and scour for Mac websites and all of that might be scared by some of those reports. But I think most people are not aware of it, and hopefully some people are also keeping it in perspective that, you know, every product that rolls out has some lemons, and if it's 10% or 20%, there's a problem, and if it's, you know, 1% or 0.5% or 0.1%, it's sort of common. You know, I've been happy with mine, and I know that people are happy with theirs. It's a fun product.
With my MacBook Pro, everyone said, well, did your MacBook Pro do this and did your MacBook Pro do that? I got to tell you, I got one of the very first ones to ship. I've never heard the whining noise everybody talks about. I've never had the fan problem everybody talks about, so I do think sometimes those rumors get overblown.
You've never heard the whining noise. Now, did you ever go to like lots of rock concerts, or are you a musician or something like that? Because I am pretty sensitive in the high range, in the really high treble range, and I can hear that whine on most MacBook Pros.
Well, see, that could be it. I did stand in front of a few Marshall amplifiers in my day.
So that might be part of it. But, you know, I've got a very early MacBook, and I haven't really had any trouble with it. The trouble I've had with it is not trouble that I didn't have with my previous PowerBooks, which is, you know, Apple's laptops sometimes just don't know when to go to sleep and when to wake up, and that's not new. So,
right. Well, speaking of new, here's something that's so new it doesn't exist.
But, oh, good.
But Chris would know about it if it did. The rumors. This is my favorite part of the show. This is where we ask Chris about rumors. There's rumor that Apple is going to come up with a 32 gigabyte flash-based iPod. And what would any MacBreak Weekly show be without an iPod rumor?
Right. Yeah, I think this is another instance of people taking various pieces, putting them together, and coming up with, this is going to happen. Yeah, someday there probably will be a much larger capacity iPod. What's kind of putting all this together now is that Samsung and SanDisk recently announced 8 gigabyte flash RAM products. There's a phone from Samsung and a music player from SanDisk. And also, last winter, Apple entered into an agreement with Intel and Micron and gave them each $25 million to have first dibs on the flash RAM that they came up with. And they've since come up with 32 gigabyte chips that should be in the pipeline later this year or early next year. So you put those two together and think, here's this Nano. It hasn't been updated in a while. It's only 4 gigabytes. Recently on Playlist, I suggested that an 8 gigabyte Nano would be coming fairly soon, the fact that Samsung and SanDisk are announcing products for that. But people are willing to jump way over that and say, no, look, the tea leaves are, everything's lined up. It's going to be a 32 gigabyte Nano, and it's going to come out early next year. We'll see.
So somebody tried to be 4 times smarter than you.
Apparently so, because they had these other little facts. So they thought, look, they're doing this, and this is going to come out, and naturally Apple's going to get it. And they're right. When these bigger chips do come out, Apple takes advantage of it because they buy a lot of this stuff. They buy it in bulk. And there was some suggestion that because Samsung and SanDisk made this media, that they would withhold it. They would use it in their products and not give it to anybody else. But there are multiple divisions in these companies, and one of these divisions is tasked with selling as many of these chips as they can to whoever has the money to buy them. So I don't see that, particularly SanDisk, whose music player market is not one of their major components of their business, they're not going to hold out on selling hundreds of thousands of expensive chips just for the sake of selling, 10,000 music players.
Merlin, I want you to jump in because I want to ask you a really fun question I've been thinking about all day. And I didn't tell you I was going to do this because I just wanted to get your candid response.
Okay.
If there was such a thing as a 43 folders iPod, what would it look like?
Oh, gosh. That's a pretty good question. How would it help you to be less distracted? It would probably be made out of paper. And it would... I don't know. I think it would probably beep at you a lot and remind you to get back to work.
That's what I expected, something like that from you, because I know you're a fan of paper.
The people who visit the site are fans of paper, but they're also big fans of iPods, and a lot of people actually use their iPod, as as a very lightweight PDA, just to have your address book with you, the contacts, information, and calendar stuff. Ran across a great little website today that will basically translate any web page into an iPod book and let you just drop that right onto your player. So, yeah, people are actually finding really novel uses for their iPods.
Do me a favor and send me that URL so we can put it into the show notes, please.
I absolutely will.
And I want to stick with you here, Merlin, because I want to ask you to give us your brief impressions on the consumer side of Leopard. You've talked about it a little bit. Somebody who's a process expert like you, I'm very anxious to get your take on what we saw at WWDC of Leopard.
Well, it's on the face of it, it doesn't seem to have quite the same zing and zazz as the last two or three releases. Obviously it's a developer conference, so the stuff that comes out is going to be developer-centric. And the developers I've talked to seem really excited about the kind of hooks that are in there. I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks. You know, it's very early on, but there's, I think a lot of us, at least on the website, stuff we've talked about, stuff we've been sitting on, waiting for improvements, really significant improvements to Mail.app and iCal and God knows the Finder. And I think we're all still kind of holding out hope that that stuff will come along. And I don't know, it'll just be really interesting to see what happens with things like Spotlight. You know, Spotlight is not exposed in all these obvious ways. You can't see all the amazing things Spotlight can do unless you really drill down with it. So I have a feeling by the time this ships, there's going to be some pretty interesting stuff popping up.
Well, I was mostly disappointed that they didn't talk about .Mac. I think .Mac needs an overhaul. In fact, my .Mac isn't even working right now.
You're not alone.
I'm not. Anybody else having trouble with .Mac?
The fact that it's down so much of the time, it feels like it has a lot of downtime. Does anybody else feel that?
Chris?
I don't rely on .Mac. I use it for some things, but it's not my primary email account. So mostly what I've noticed in .Mac in the last 3 weeks or so is I'm getting a ton more spam there than I used to.
Yeah, my three big complaints are same thing, Chris. I've been getting oodles of spam all of a sudden. For a long time, I went along spam-free, and now I get 2.7 trillion spams per minute, it seems like. It's been down a couple times. But the most perplexing for me this week has been that I can receive mail but not send it. So I don't know. I'm ready for .Mac to get an overhaul.
.Mac fans are rabid, though. It's the funniest thing. For people who do pay the fee every year, they really want to love it. And increasingly, you hear a lot of call for applications – things like Yojimbo, where they're able to kind of interact with .Mac. And I think that's an interesting thing to watch. NetNewsWire is another one that supports that. And for people who are living in a couple different places, you know, for their work and home, you know, it'll be interesting to see that. That's an opportunity they could really pick up on.
You mentioned something I think that's really important, which is people paying for .Mac. When we're talking about a Leopard, it's 9 months away. And that means that, so what, 3/4 of Apple's .Mac users will have to pay between now and then? You know, a lot of things Apple holds back from these preliminary announcements, they're really just trying to stoke the flames and tell some things to developers and get a little coverage. But, you know, rolling out new features to .Mac that might not be, that might be tied to Leopard and won't be out for 9 months, maybe not the best thing to do when you're trying to get people to re-up for .Mac right now. I mean, some of that stuff they might want to hold back because it's so far away.
The one reason I think there's so much, I don't know, opportunity here is that I just hear people again and again saying these problems they're having with, you know, syncing up two different worlds. And, you know, web dev is still something that's not really out there for a lot of, you know, regular users. So I think it's their game to lose. It's a service people would pay for with just a little bit more stuff. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, we have to wait and see.
And they don't, of course, when they want to make their big splash for the new OS, they're not going to say, we fixed lots of bugs. That's a feature. They're going to like keep that on the down low. Even if they do it, right, they don't really want to call attention and put out a press release for that. I think, actually, Merlin, that Spaces is interesting because, you know, I think that might be a good organizational tool. And I'm not really satisfied with the virtual desktop software that's up there now. I think it's kind of weird, hard for regular people to get. And I'm hoping that Apple will kind of apply their trademark simplicity to it to make people just kind of get what it means and how to use it.
That one completely surprised me. I mean, I sat down and tried to play with the virtual desktop apps, and I find them baffling. So, I mean, it's really kind of a power geek thing, almost kind of a Linux sort of thing to do.
It is an interesting thing. I want to move on because I just want to touch on two things before we close. One is that a magazine not called Macworld rated the Mac as having the most satisfied customers, PC Magazine. Everybody see that?
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Yeah, 92% of the people said they were happy with their Mac. I just thought it was interesting that a PC magazine was running an article that talked about how popular the Mac was. And the last thing I want to mention is something that's been shaking around for a long time in legal circles has come to the surface today. Apple has agreed to pay $100 million, that's million with an M, to Creative, and the folks at Creative are all somewhere out doing margaritas tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Did everybody hear about that?
And that's because of the similarity with the interface and how you kind of get around?
It's a patent violation.
Yeah, they've got some patents, and I'm thinking $100 million, that's like way more than Creative's ever made on an MP3 player before, right?
Yeah. I paid about half that for my first jukebox, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, and there are a group of companies that seem to exist on not their products, but their intellectual property, hoping that they can get somebody to violate them. I don't know that Creative was one of those kinds of companies, but I do think that $100 million tops the earnings they've had in any two-year period.
You're missing two important points there, though. One is that it's Apple's licensing their patents in perpetuity. So essentially what Apple's done is pay $100 million as a settlement to drop the lawsuits. And given how much money Apple makes on the iPod, that's nothing. And the second one is that the second half of the press release about this settlement said that Creative proudly is going to be coming out with a line of made-for-iPod-branded iPod accessories. So much for this war between Apple and Creative. Right now, Creative's going to be waving the flag.
If you're familiar with the made-for-iPod program, that means that whenever Creative sells a device under that label, that they'll be giving some money back to Apple for it. So make lots of products, and Apple will earn its money back.
Unless that's part of the settlement, not to pay Apple for that.
It could be.
Tell you what, I wish I could think of something that was worth $100 million.
Amen.
Well, it's been a great show, and we're going to wrap up. I want to thank my guest. I have two Macworlders here, but, you know, that's okay. That just happened by accident. We have Jason Snell and Chris Breen from Macworld Magazine. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
And Merlin Mann. This guy has one of the most popular blogs in the known universe, 43 Folders. Be sure to check that out. Thanks for joining us, Merlin. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, guys.
And until next week, this has been Mac Break. And for Leo Laporte, I'm Scott Bornstein. Thanks for listening.